Good morning. Please be seated. Our gospel lesson today centers on the anxieties and the aspirations of two disciples, James and John. They're brothers, and they are part of Jesus' intimate inner circle. Because of their closeness to Jesus, they believe they have a special claim on him. These two brothers, sons of Zebedee, had been called away from their fishing boats by Jesus to become fishers of men and women. They dropped their nets, walked away from their father, and left him to fish and mend the nets by himself. They became passionate followers of Jesus. They were eager to have Jesus' attention and confidences. They very much sought the status they believed their relationship with Jesus should grant them. They were outspoken and prideful, and Jesus had to admonish them from time to time. But Jesus, of course, loved them, and he welcomed them to make their request. This request was that they be seated, one at his right hand and one on his left, when Jesus came into his kingdom. Their idea of this kingdom was a kingdom of power and glory and light, not of the servanthood and sacrifice that Jesus foresaw. Their vision had to do with fulfilling their own needs, not the needs that Jesus saw. In our own highly competitive culture, gaining status, power, and glory requires a lot of maneuvering. One must behave in certain ways and acquire certain attributes to have the relationships that might offer better status. A person can completely lose herself in climbing to a rank higher than others. It may mean turning away from other important relationships. It may mean turning away from one's community. In other words, gaining higher status can result in very inauthentic behavior and the loss of one's God-given mission and purpose. It can also create a form of deep loneliness. It's important to keep in mind as well that the desire for better status is not limited to people who are seeking institutional, social, or public status. We are keenly aware at this very moment of hunger, disaster, and oppression, and the people who are desperately seeking improved status. People have to compete to get into the front of the line to secure the bare necessities of life. Obtaining enough status to simply stay alive is an overwhelming burden because the needed resources are often simply inaccessible. We are thwarted at times by environmental conditions, unequal distribution of wealth, and sometimes simply lack of will to provide the food, shelter, and the justice that others deserve. I'm not quite sure why the story of James and John prompted me so clearly to examine my own sibling relationship. In other words, the relationship between my brother Howard and me. But it immediately did so. And so I went where that story took me. And I hope you'll bear with me. My brother is a couple of years younger than I. Fortunately, we outgrew our sibling rivalry, which had sometimes been quite fierce, early in our childhoods. Our parents were equal opportunity parents, and so just because my brother was a male did not mean that in some way he was automatically favored. Quite to the contrary, I was the favored child. Most likely because I met my parents' expectations, stayed out of trouble, and tried very, very hard to please my father. That was the key. Not so with my brother. He was resistant and restive, and he kind of did his own thing throughout his childhood. So there was some status inequity between us. We recognized it then, and we talk about it now. The talking that we have done over the years has served to strengthen our mutual understanding of ourselves and of each other and of our story. It has helped to build a lifelong work of self-awareness that both supports our care for each other and reinforces the personal courage we sometimes need in the difficulties of our lives. It would have been no surprise if there was some built-in status rivalry between James and John. As an older son, at that time, was much more likely to find favor with a father, and especially in the social order of things. But in this request that they had of Jesus, the brothers were arm in arm, together, pursuing the same goal of becoming key players in the power and the glory and the light of the kingdom of God. When my brother and I were young, our dad decided that we should learn to sail. He had a habit of going after experiences for himself and for us that ranked just a little bit above that life of relative poverty that he had experienced as a child. He wanted to ski, to swim, and play tennis. And he wanted us to be able to do all those things and do them well. You might think of it as status seeking. He'd become more educated than his brothers and sisters, chose an academic life rather than a vocational one. For him, these achievements went beyond his status as a child and as a young man. He married a beautiful, well-educated woman, my mother, of course, from a middle-class family who was sophisticated and sociable. She had a close-knit group of friends who were smart and did interesting things, and sailing was one of those things they did. So for him, it was different. It was unique and urbane. He wanted to learn how to sail and was determined that we would as well. Our early days of sailing as a family of four on a 15-and-a-half-foot boat designed for just two people were pretty hilarious and sometimes quite crazy. My father even wrote a poem about one of our most crazy adventures. We never capsized, although we came close many times. We lost rudders. We ran aground. Occasionally, someone fell off the boat. But somehow, we managed to figure out how to navigate an inland lake in south central Wisconsin. It became our lake. In order to turn us into independent sailors, our dad began by buying a mail order kit. Now, this is in the 1950s, to build a sailboat from a company in Connecticut. It was a 7.5-foot boat called a seashell. He built it, and we learned to sail it. In just a few years, we graduated to an Optimist pram, another 7.5-foot sailing dinghy. Our dad eventually, of course, wanted us to learn to compete, to sail in races. He began building these wonderful little boats himself because he wanted us to have lighter, sturdier, more slick hulls because, of course, he wanted us to win. He really wanted us to win. And we did. With heaps of coaching and critique from our father before and after every race, those post-race sessions could be miserable and demoralizing to have all of our flaws pointed out to us. But when we were out on the water by ourselves, we were excited and happy and confident. We sailed those boats well into our teenage years. My brother still has two of the original boats, which are now over 60 years old. Eventually, we outgrew the prams, and Dad decided we should start racing a snipe together. A snipe, another kind of sailing boat, a bit bigger, a 15-foot boat, is very sporty. You have to be quite agile to work with it. It's kind of a sensitive boat, easy to tip over. He traded two of his precious hand-built prams for a relatively new snipe, and we learned how to sail together. I became the skipper, and my brother was the crew. I managed the tiller and the mainsail, and my brother was up front handling the foresail. I was the strategist, he was the technician. That snipe required much more skill than the little prams, so it was quite a challenge. As we raced together, our relationship changed. In fact, it changed dramatically. We discovered a very different kind of communication with each other. We paid as much attention to each other's actions and ideas as we did to our own. We got very creative in dealing with fishermen on the race course. While we still had to endure those post-race critiques, we were a team. We were our own team, perhaps a bit like James and John, who bonded with each other when they fished, and eventually as disciples when called upon to spread the word of God and introduce others to Jesus. Howard and I gained a kind of status because we won races, and that, of course, pleased our father. But the most important thing we gained was the bond we created as brother and sister. We still sail together, and when we do, I still take the tiller and the mainsail, he the foresail and the sheets. But we're always listening and attending to each other. In a sense, sailing is a metaphor for our relationship. We made this healthy move, albeit a bit tricky, out of the triangle with our father to become our own partnership of sailing. He had taught us, he mentored us, he made this great adventure possible, but we were now on our own to share some of the most exciting experiences of our childhood. We have shared the love of sailing and our skills. I once was an instructor for a sailing school, and we have taught others to sail, including children and grandchildren. Unfortunately, none of them has become as enchanted with sailing as we have, but they do recognize and must acknowledge the unique role of sailing in our family history. So let's go back to James and John, the brothers, the bonded brothers, asking Jesus to improve their status, to reassure them about their relationship with him, and to fix their places in the kingdom. In response, first, Jesus makes it clear that it is not he who makes these kinds of decisions. It's up to God. And Jesus is a bit vague about what that kingdom is. He says, it is for those for whom it has been prepared. But he makes it clear about what it is when he asks the brothers what kinds of sacrifice they're willing to make for it. Jesus may sit at the right hand of God in the kingdom, but his place in the kingdom will come at a great cost. Not only his death, but the fierce opposition to tyrants and people with earthly power. He will not be seeking status, but rather upending the idea of status in the traditional sense. He also says that his role is to be God's servant, to be a servant to everyone, and to surrender his life so that others might experience salvation. He's instructing James and John to mature, to grow up to be the fishers of people he had called them to be. What do we suppose James and John understood of Jesus' message? The other disciples were quite unhappy with them in their effort to elevate themselves. All along, Jesus has been modeling servanthood, not rank. All the disciples were asked to become servants and perhaps to give their lives for the ministry of Christ. Were they not all equal to James and John in Jesus' eyes? Did Jesus really play favorites? Not so much. Well, maybe a little at times. I would like to think that after this interaction with Jesus, James and John went away and talked not only about their relationship with Jesus, but their relationship with each other. Perhaps they began to discuss the question of how, as brothers, they were to be present in the world and as followers of Jesus. How might they turn status-seeking into a lifelong cooperative mission? What would they sacrifice together? How would they align themselves with each other and the other disciples instead of competing for status? James and John had learned to fish under the tutelage of their father. They left him to be taught by Jesus to envision themselves as fishers of people. Jesus has now asked them to come out from under their clouded understanding, both of how God works and how Jesus works, and to carve out a new identity. I like to imagine James and John, like my brother and me, creating a new vision for their relationship, taking the lessons and the passion of the Father and creating a new and abiding relationship that might serve others. Throughout our lives, we have drawn upon our sibling partnership to navigate the complexities of our lives in its many dimensions. Perhaps, just perhaps, James and John forged a new kind of sibling relationship. Perhaps they created a bond that took the lessons of the Father as spoken through Jesus and made the sacrifices, endured the hardship, and inspired brotherhood among other followers of Jesus.